I'm very pleased to say I'm joined by Aegon Conlon, who is an ex-jockey and also now a practicing sports psychologist. And I think this is going to be a fascinating interview. Thank you so much for joining us, Aegon. Of course, jockey mental health in particular has really been brought to the fore in recent weeks because of the sad news about Liam Treadwell. We'll come to all that much later. But first of all, just tell the viewers a bit about yourself, your jockey background and what you do now.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Julie. It's a pleasure to talk about it. So a diverse enough background, I suppose, but I was an amateur jockey for about 4.5 years in Ireland. I rode 8 winners there on the track and point to pointing, so I wasn't setting the world alight. But I was very lucky. I rode a horse for Rebecca Curtis in Galway in 2009 and ended up finishing second on it. And she offered me the chance to turn professional in the UK. So which I did, and I came over in January 2010. And yeah, for another sort of four and a half years, I rode as a conditional jockey for Rebecca and also for Tom George. And I rode about 36 winners. And then, so the last season, I think I was on about 4 winners for the year. So it was sort of a decision to make. I was 26 at the time, which doesn't sound young or doesn't sound old at all now looking back. But at the time, I was sort of conscious that I was putting a lot into the career, and it wasn't really going anywhere, whether it was lack of ability or whatever it might have been. But I sort of had a look at the landscape and saw how difficult it was. And there's obviously so many talented jockeys out there and limited opportunities for the less talented of us. So I made the decision to change tack and change career. And I was always interested in psychology all along. I did work with a sports psychologist myself. So I decided 2014, I went to university. So I got my undergraduate degree in psychology. Then I did an MSc in sport and exercise psychology. And that sort of brings me up to today. And currently I'm doing my charter training to become a fully qualified sports psychologist. And then also on top of that, I'm doing a PhD at the University of Bath. And that's where we're looking at breathing techniques and how they influence performance under pressure for all athletes. So that's the sort of training side of it. And then the applied work, I'm performance consultant to the Professional Jockeys Association. And I also work with British Athletics, England Hockey and England Netball, providing psych support for the younger athletes. So that's up until now.
So you obviously cover a range of sports, but your sort of unique selling point, if you like, is for jockeys, because you very much understand not just the pressures of being a jockey and all that entails, but also the language. You can communicate with them really well. How would you say that your sort of professional career as a jockey helps you in what you do now, specifically in horse racing?
Oh, massively. As you said, that's my USP. Language is key in any sort of interaction, but especially when you're trying to connect with someone that you might have met before and you're trying to help them through something. So being able to use language, whether it's a flat jockey or a jump jockey, using little analogies in racing that can work in real life, etc., is massive. And even if they come to you with a challenge that they're facing, you know, I wasn't a great jockey, so I've been in every bad sort of mental place that you could imagine in terms of performance. So I do feel that I have an empathy for those in racing, and it does work outside of racing as well. I think athletes like to hear about different people in different sports, so I do think it does help me massively. But yeah, as I said, the language is huge. Obviously in psychology, language is everything, and being able to communicate on that personal level and have that comfort using that contextual language is key.
Now, you and I spoke the other day about the challenges facing jockeys, and I probably understood one or two of them, but the way you explain it, you know, it really is a tough lifestyle. So I want to go through some of those challenges now. Obviously all sports people have highs and lows, but that is particularly, I think, relevant to jockeys. You said that 90% of the emotion that a jockey would feel when they win is actually relief.
Yeah, for a large, I don't want to speak for everybody, but for a large percentage of people that I speak to, yeah, there is a good deal of a relief. Obviously, they get a kick out of it. But when you're going into any sort of race, there is pressure, and some people have used language that, you know, when I ride a winner, I'm just doing my job. I'm just kind of getting that done. So yeah, I think there is obviously you go to a festival, whether it's a Cheltenham or if it's an Ascot, you're going to get a big kick. But on the day to day sort of stuff, it's just kind of nice recognition. Well, I've got my job done and move on. So it's probably similar to a lot of careers, whether it's in sport or outside of it. You know, you have your great days where you nail a meeting or you nail a sales pitch or whatever, and then the other days you're just kind of, you know, you're getting through it. So yeah, as I said, I didn't want to speak for everybody, but I've found a lot of people that I've spoken to do have that just major sense of relief, and maybe more than the other emotions.
And there is an awful lot of energy that goes into being a professional jockey across a number of levels. Talk us through that, because it really is only a small percentage of jockeys that make it to the top sort of Group 1 races and to your Ascots and your Cheltenhams and things like that. And yet everyone is having to put an enormous amount of energy into just surviving, really.
Yeah, huge. Well, if you look at it maybe from an apprentice or conditionals point of view when they start out, you know, they're going to be riding, working for the boss 13 days out of 14. And on that 14th day, that Sunday off, they're probably going right out for another trainer to try to get rides from someone else. So obviously that's time, the energy that's putting in. If you're getting up at 5:30, 6 in the morning, you're mucking out. You're going racing, so you could be driving 3 or 4 hours. You're riding, you're coming back 3 or 4 hours. And sometimes those apprentice conditions have to do evening stables behind that. And so there's a huge effort that goes into it. And I do understand that that's part of the industry. And, you know, you do have to be physically tough and, you know, kind of have that sort of resilience to get through it. And so it's not necessarily kind of given out about that. That's just the way the industry is. But it is, as you said, like if you're your Frankie Dettori's or your Richard Johnson's, you know, you're more likely to get on those better horses on the weekends. Whereas, you know, if you're further in a pecking order, it's harder to get those opportunities. And as you said, you're putting in this similar amount of effort. So there is for a lot of jockeys, there's that effort, reward, and balance. And even if you're looking at a good sort of win percentage strike rate, it's maybe between 10 and 15%. So, you know, they're getting beat 80% plus of the time. So maybe they're not on a horse with a chance all of that time, but that's still a lot of losing to kind of deal with, and there's a lot of disappointment. So yeah, so it's a hard industry to get maybe what you perceive the rewards you think you should earn for the amount of effort you put in. But as I said, that's sport in general, isn't it? So yeah, it's sort of what you sign up for in a sense.
I think it's fair to say that it sounds very mentally and physically draining. And you were telling me that, you know, the way the horse racing season, it kind of rolls on and on, whether you're flat or jump jockey, and a day off or a break, say a holiday, for example, is sort of perceived as a bit lazy almost.
Yeah, I do think, as you said, it's difficult to draw comparisons with other sports, but I do think what is unique about racing is the show rolls on. Obviously bar the lockdown period, but usually, as you said, the turf season ends, it's straight into the all weather, over jumps, Sandown is the last day of the season, and they kick off again a week, 5 days later, whether it's the Ludlow or somewhere like that. So there is that kind of consistent sort of workload, consistent having to kind of go race and ride out, keep people happy. And as you said, taking time off in the past perhaps has been seen as being lazy. You know, if you've been driving all week and you're absolutely shattered, but you've kind of promised someone else that you're going to go into them on a Sunday, you know, it's rare that you're going to kind of ring that trainer up and say, oh, I'm wrecked, I need to take this day off. And so yeah, that not being able to take time off, and it's especially because nothing's guaranteed in racing, I think, as well. So if you're a professional soccer player, you sign a contract for 30 games a season, you're getting paid for those games regardless whether you're injured or your manager doesn't want to select you. Whereas in racing, you know, no rides are guaranteed. No winners are guaranteed. And even like, you know, some jockeys may have agreements with trainers, but it's usually verbal. Maybe agreements with owners, they might get rewarded as a principal jockey, with a maintenance sort of a fee. But for the vast majority of jockeys, yeah, you have to get on that horse in a race to get paid. So there's that constant pressure. Well, if I don't go into this person, this trainer, that, you know, they're not going to give me a ride in the future, or I'm not going to maintain that relationship. And if I am riding for them at the time being, and they might perceive me to be lazy or whatever. So yeah, it's a difficult one to balance. Again, it's one of those sort of demands of the industry. But yeah, it's certainly a pressure for everyone, I suppose, isn't it?
And then other pressures, to a greater or lesser extent. Some jockeys obviously will struggle to keep their weight down. That would be another one. But also, what about the aspect of, you know, there must be a bit of a fear factor, because jockeys get injured so much and they're incredibly brave, and I think of it a little bit sort of resilient to pain almost, because it's just an accepted thing, isn't it? If you're a jockey, you're going to get bad, really bad injuries, and some that could see you on the sidelines for a long period of time.
Yeah, for sure. I suppose speaking personal point of view, I've been riding ponies since I was 5 or 6. So like the classic thing was, if you fall off, you get straight back on as soon as you can, even if you're feeling a bit sore. So I suppose it's ingrained in a lot of jump jockeys, if they've been riding for most of their lives, that kind of incentive is to get straight back on the horse if you are injured. So that's obviously tempered with what degree you are injured. So the physical pain is something that you kind of you sign up for, you accept. I suppose if you spoke to a lot of jockeys, the psychological pain of watching other riders win on their horses is probably can be worse. And then, as you said, the confidence or the fear, I think it's a bit of a taboo subject to talk about bottle almost as a jump jockey. But I do think there's a difference between bottle and confidence. And having spoken with some jockeys, your confidence can be shaken a little bit. Your bottle is absolutely fine, but it might take 5 or 6 races just to get back up to speed, back in that kind of, in that flow, or plenty of schooling, whatever. You know, some jockeys are a little bit nervous coming back from a fall, and that's perfectly understandable. So those intrinsic demands, I suppose, injuries and weight are always there, especially in racing.
Tell us a bit more about your professional career, your own experience as a professional jockey, because the first year was financially a real struggle for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, so when I came over, obviously you're trying to get going. I was based in Pembrokeshire in West Wales, so I did a lot of driving on my own. I didn't know a lot of the lads, and I probably would have been a little bit shy in the way of them anyway, so I wouldn't have been kind of looking for lifts here and there. So I did a lot of driving on my own, and I would be driving for one ride. Obviously, as a conditional, you wouldn't have your 5 or 6 rides a day. So yeah, I lost money for the first season, but you know, you're happy to do so, because like within 3 months, from riding as a book amateur in Ireland, I got to ride in County Hurdle for Rebecca at the festival, you know. So like I was more than happy to be going racing and driving 5, 6, 7 hours a day. But yeah, financially I lost money the first year. Second year it was quite good. I rode 17 winners and developed a lot of great contacts. Obviously I had Rebecca, Deborah Hamer in Carmarthenshire, Evan Williams was really good to me as well. So the Welsh trainer supported me, and had a couple of nice rides at the festival. Fell off one at the third fence, which still haunts me to this day. But I had a nice ride for Evan in the boys' race that year. We finished about 7th, I think it was, but we were pretty competitive all the way. Yeah, and then from that year, unfortunately that was probably the peak. If I had have known at the time, I might have done something different. But yeah, the final year I rode about 8 winners and just struggled a little bit, and I always would have struggled with my own confidence. I think that's why I'm interested in psychology, because I was always sort of fighting what people perceived me to be riding like. I think if I was a horse, I'd be described as a morning glory. I was probably quite good at home, but couldn't quite translate it onto the track for a variety of reasons. And then sort of the year before I stopped, I got a fall in Hereford in December 2012. I fractured the base of my skull, both eye sockets, both cheekbones, and had a brain fluid leak for a week. So that really sort of made me kind of sit up and think about, you know, as we said, the effort I was putting in, I wasn't necessarily getting the rewards from it. But yeah, I was out for 4 months through to 2013. And funnily enough, I didn't get a massive fright from it. I didn't have a lot of pain at the time because I think my body just went straight into shock and said, you don't really need to feel what's going on here. So luckily enough, my sort of core confidence wasn't shaken, but maybe that kind of confidence when you go out on the track and you're again worried about what people are thinking when they're watching you ride. I think that's something I always struggle with and never could quite shake. And then, as I said, yeah, the last season, I kind of said to myself, oh, well, if it doesn't go well this year, I'm going to try something else. But then again, the regret of mine there would be I should have shaked things up a little bit. I probably did the same in terms of I was working with the same people. I probably should have pushed myself out of my own comfort zone or done a little bit of training with a show jumper, or, you know, do something a little bit different to try and enhance whatever limited abilities I had myself. But I didn't. But, you know, you live and learn and try to bring some of those lessons into this career. But yeah, so 2014 was the last year that I rode competitively.
And it all sounds really tough to me, really tough. Without sort of comparing to other sports, you know, professions or whatever, is it a tough lifestyle as a jockey, would you say?
Yes.
It sounds a bit.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, as I said, it's that constant grind. You have very little security in terms of rides, guaranteed rides, winners. I don't mean to paint it in completely negative picture. Like, you know, I grew up loving horses. I still love horses, and I was very privileged to make a career and earn money riding horses. You know, it sounds quite simple. It sounds, you know, it is quite fun for a large degree, and riding out at home, there's always good crack in the yards and stuff like that. So I'm certainly not trying to paint it out as a massive evil, but it is tough. And I think some of the lessons that you learn in racing serve you so well when you get into the real world. You know, like a bad day for me is forgetting to send an email now. So instead of a bad day for someone racing is going home in a hospital, you know, or home in an ambulance. So yeah, it gives me massive perspective. My skills, like work ethic and punctuality, like simple things, but from what I had to go through racing, life is a lot easier outside of that. But then I don't experience those highs that those jockeys are getting at, those Saturday winners and the Cheltenham. So I think you have to balance it if you want to kind of feel those highs and emotions and that success. I think you have to put up with a lot of kind of hard days, a lot of injuries, a lot of disappointments. But that's sport in general, isn't it? So yeah. Pros and cons, I suppose, is the best way to sum it up.
So, Egon, where would you say the horse racing industry is at the moment in regards to helping jockeys who may be struggling with their mental well-being?
I think we've come an awful long way in a very short space of time. Even from when I stopped riding in 2014, we've improved no end. In terms of the well-being, I suppose you could kind of distinguish sort of three main areas. So we have sort of clinical referral route for those who might be really struggling psychologically. Then we have sort of more general overall well-being. And I think in that scenario, JETS do a really good job. So jockeys education and training, they kind of look right from the get-go when a jockey gets their license. They look at developing the person outside of racing, so developing your skills and transferable skills, and really kind of reinforcing that you're not just a jockey. And I think that helps hugely in terms of well-being, that you're not getting all your positive regard or your sense of self-worth just from because you ride a winner or you don't ride a winner. Doesn't necessarily make you a good or a bad person. So I think that's huge. And jets also help in terms of when jockeys are injured. So they set up sort of further training, whether it's, you know, there's carpentry kind of qualifications that people have done, HGV licensing, plumbing, electricians, all different kind of careers that people can kind of start while they're still racing. And then for the career transition, that's somewhere where jets help me no end. So in terms of funding, they funded a large percentage of my university fees up until now, and they keep doing so, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And then I suppose my role then, I suppose, maybe is more sort of that performance mindset. And I look at sort of, well, it starts off when I meet the jockeys for those licensing courses and just giving them an introduction to sports psychology and trying to get across that it's not necessarily if there's a problem or a challenge, but you could just want to improve and develop your performance. And there's lots of athletes that have done that and lots of jockeys that have done that. So trying to get that across, it's not just necessarily problem focused. So yeah, I do a little bit of that. And then on working with the one-to-ones with jockeys in terms of sort of phone calls, a lot of the work I've done, again, around sort of confidence, dealing with failure, balancing relationship with trainers is a big thing, especially as a jockey goes through their claim and maybe they're trying to keep one or two trainers happy. Just offering that space for that jockey to have a conversation, and I would probably give very little input, but I can kind of bounce back ideas and again understanding that language and helping jockeys kind of through some of those areas. So that's a sort of kind of the overall sort of three main phases or spaces. But yeah, in terms of the referral for the clinical route, so obviously the Professional Jock Association, the PJA, have a direct referral working with clinical psychologists and clinical counselling. So if a jockey feels that they might have a challenge or an issue in regards to their mental well-being, and they've got 6 free sessions straight off the bat with a clinical psych or a counsellor. And then if more is needed, then it's just a very quick review on the PGA, then go again. So however number of sessions they need on top of that, then they get that. There's a 24/7 helpline for jockeys that they can ring, and they can have direct access to a counsellor if they just need to get something off their chest, which I think is really good. And similarly, the Injured Jockeys Fund offer psych provision. So if a jockey goes in and gets a rehab, they usually have a sort of a triage of what the jockey needs. And a part of that package is psych support as well. So that's based in the IGF centres in Lambourne, Newmarket and up in Malton. So I was speaking with some of my colleagues, but up until now, I think we've had 150 jockeys approaching for well-being services. So I think that's a really good number. It represents about 40% of the current licensed jockeys. So that's between the PGA and the IJF. So I think we have a really good kind of engagement percentage. If you read the article that Harry Teal spoke about last week in The Guardian, he kind of spoke of how the system worked for him and helped him. So I think it's good to kind of get that positive feedback, but also be mindful that we can always improve. And then I suppose the other main aspects would be the sort of promotional work. So Jets, again, the Jockey Matters videos were a big thing. So we had a lot of, about maybe 7 or 8 videos with jockeys kind of explaining their own experiences in different aspects of racing. So it went from mental health, well-being, resilience, nutrition. We had a driving safety video, being fit to fall, addiction recovery. So we had lots of kind of, Johnny Murta was on there. We had lots, Lynn Aspel, Mark Enright was very open about his struggles with depression. So with well-being, obviously everything affects it. If you're doing light, you haven't eaten for 2 days, you're going to be a little bit irritable. So those Jockey Matters have been really good in getting jockeys' experiences across and just making it okay to kind of talk to themselves and each other about such challenges that arise. So I think they've been really good in terms of the promotion and sort of normalized conversation around all topics and well-being. And then again, in the training seminars, the conditionals and the apprentices have a couple of sessions with Sporting Chance. So they talk about mental well-being in general and then sort of gambling or substance abuse addictions, which unfortunately racing and gambling and obviously alcohol and drugs is pervasive in all manners of society. So it's going to be pervasive in racing, and it's just making sure that behaviors around alcohol and whether it's smoking, whatever it might be, are well discussed, and jockeys understand what the drawbacks from them might be. And it's not saying that everybody should be teetotal at all, but it's, I suppose, that if you're relying on those nights out or getting alcohol on the way home from the races, if you're relying on that to get you through the day, then that might be an issue, and that's something to address.
You used the word normalize, which is something I think normalizing seeking help for mental well-being across the board, not just in sport, is certainly been a hot topic over recent years. And jockeys have access very, very freely and easily without feeling any kind of shame to nutritionists and physios. So their kind of physical well-being is really obviously taken care of. Do you think there would be a place for having a mental health professional present, you know, more present? So you're saying that services are easily accessible, but perhaps more could be done to make it more accessible, almost given to jockeys.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you're lucky, it's a difficult industry because there's no sort of, we're all sort of spread out, and it obviously goes the length and the breadth of the country. So it's not like a jockey goes into a training center every morning like a footballer might and has all these services to hand. In saying that, the Injured Jockeys Fund centres have been obviously wonderful over the past sort of 10, 15 years. So when you're looking at sort of the main services, you look at physio, S&C, nutritionist, they're all sort of on site. And even if you're a jockey and you've been used to eating a certain way and you meet a nutritionist in there, you mightn't necessarily engage with them the first time. But you might have a conversation with them and, oh, they seem okay. And then it could be a month down the line and it's like, actually, I need a little bit of help with my nutrition or my diet around my food choices, whatever it might be. So I do think we could probably increase the physical presence maybe of well-being practitioners or sports psychologists or clinical psychologists and maybe in those centres. And I know certainly the PGA and the IGF have done their independent reviews of those services, and I'm fairly certain that there are plans to implement some of those changes and that have come out of the reviews. But I do think passing someone in the corridor, having an odd chat every now and again, will help normalize their position, and then hopefully a jockey might be more willing or more encouraged to actually, they seem okay, they're not a shrink or kind of the classic psych caricature that you might have. And again, I would, you know, reinforce that it's not necessarily because there's a problem, but it's, you know, you might be at baseline and you can get better as a jockey if your mindset is a little bit improved in certain areas. So yeah, I think a physical presence would be helpful. But yeah, that's certainly one of the challenges that has arisen over the past couple of months in terms of those independent reviews, but that's something that is in the pipeline.
The Injured Jockeys Fund and the Professional Jockeys Association have taken some criticism in recent weeks since the death of Liam Treadwell. Do you think that's justified? And is there anything else that you would be pushing forward to suggest should happen?
Difficult question. Is it justified? I knew Liam quite well. You know, couldn't say any more than has been said before in terms of his character. He's a fantastic person. With not going into the details of that too much, because obviously he's quite sensitive, quite raw still for a lot of people. But for sure, we can always do better. And I think we have to constantly kind of reflect on our own processes and systems. you know, was the criticism fair? Probably not. I think an awful lot of work has gone on in the background that isn't necessarily publicised, because when people are using the service, it is fully confidential. So it's not like maybe it's easier for an S&C coach to show how far a jockey has come, because say, oh, this jockey broke their leg in May, now they're back squatting whatever it is weight in September. I think that's a very easy thing to illustrate. Whereas if you have been working a jockey under confidence, they're not going to necessarily splash that out all over Instagram and Twitter. And then especially in terms if there is a clinical issue there and they've sought help and they've got it solved. I think Harry Thiel, again, to touch on that, that was really, really impressive of him, for him to come out and speak about his own difficulties. And he had found the service system very helpful for him. So yeah, it's you should always look at criticism and see, is there any sort of truth in it? And there always is to some degree. I said, we could certainly improve in terms of, I think, education, in terms of people just understanding what are the emotions they're feeling, understanding that that's completely normal, that we all have tough days, we all have challenges. You know, I think it's like 1 in 4 people will face a mental well-being challenge throughout the year. So yeah, it is to sort of normalize it and to give jockeys information and what the challenge they're facing, where it may have come from, and what are the sort of things you can do to help that at an early stage. I think that's probably we always say prevention is better than cure. So looking at tackling and getting the jockeys to tackle those things early doors. So if they've just been beaten a short head, or if they've just had a fall and they're struggling dealing with that, you know, getting them to speak to someone earlier than allowing that to fester. It's like if you cut your foot and you ignore it, you know, you could end up losing your foot after a couple of months, whereas you cut your foot and you clean it out and you bandage it and you dress it as soon as possible, then you're more likely to make a full recovery. It's a very bad analogy. But it's that sort of idea, and getting out front and centre, normalising that we all struggle, and then having those clear systems in place. I think a challenge for racing, because we have so many organisations. We obviously the PGA, the IGF, we've got Jets, we've got Racing Welfare, and then we've got the BHA over all of that. So synchronising, working together, making sure that service is as easily accessible as possible, I suppose, is the big challenge. And then for us as the practitioners, having those independent views, making sure that we're doing our job well and we have the right systems in place is incredibly important. I think there's a lot there inherent in the system, inherent in racing. So you look at the physios offer a lot of psych support without even necessarily realizing it. They obviously see the jockeys at their most vulnerable, and they do open up to physios, valets as well, of course. Most of them have been ex-jockeys. They're in there with them in the weigh room. They understand the demands. So I think supporting those type of people would be massive as well, in terms of their knowledge and their information of what do I do in this scenario if I feel this jockey is displaying certain characteristics or behaviours of mental well-being challenge. So look, plenty to do. I think the classic one, there's a lot done, but there's a lot more to do.
So a lot of the issues around jockey mental well-being has been brought to the fore because of the sad death of Liam Treadwell. I know that he was a friend of yours, so sorry for your loss and condolences to everybody who knew him. From the tributes I read on social media, he sounded like a wonderful person. But one thing that struck me was that a lot of people said he was a Grand National winning jockey. So, you know, maybe that should have helped to an extent, but it's much more complicated, isn't it? I think you can probably explain that better.
Yeah, first of all, look, I wouldn't say that I was best friends with him or anything, but certainly friendly in the way of him, and my thoughts are certainly with his friends and family, and we're very, very sad. Great person, absolutely. Like, and you know, you see a lot of tributes go to people when we lose them, and you know, everything is genuine that was said about him. He was like, he was a top person, and that's the worst thing about it. I think it's a fair point that he was obviously a Grand National winning jockey, Cheltenham Festival winning jockey, and I think without going into it too deep, I think it's a really good illustration that success in a sporting domain isn't necessarily going to guarantee happiness. There's always something going on in the background, and sport is a wonderful career to have, but it is a career and it's only part of your life. It can be obviously a large part of it, but there are other things going on in terms of family and getting your happiness from other things. I think like there's been countless examples in our sports, like Michael Phelps, you know, the most decorated Olympian of all time, was very open about his struggles. He went into rehab post London 2012. So yeah, I think it's important for younger athletes in general to know that if you're feeling, you know, if you're struggling a little bit, riding that winner mightn't actually be the answer. And I think that's very important to kind of note. That those sort of rewards, you know, are nice and that, but maybe there's something else going on that needs addressing. I don't know if that answered the question.
It does. For many jockeys, you're a first port of call, I guess. And if there is something else, something deeper going on, it's your job to kind of address that or figure it out, if you like. I sort of want to talk to any jockeys that might be watching this, in a sense, and I know that you've got a really helpful illustration of sort of signs to look out for anybody who might be struggling out there.
Yeah, so if you want me to do that now, I'll just share the screen, but can you see that?
Yes.
Hopefully everybody can see that. But yeah, I just actually came across it last week, and I think delphus.org.uk, so I don't get any copyright violations. But I think it was a nice illustration in terms of what mental well-being looks like. And the big thing to really reinforce is that everybody is somewhere across these five stages at any point in their life or any point in time. If we're looking at sort of that normal behavior, for lack of a better word, although what's normal, we'll probably all sit on that thriving stage, hopefully. So in terms of mood, we're positive, calm, our thinking, we're performing quite well, whatever our jobs might be, making good decisions, physically sleeping well, diet is pretty good, we eat normally, and then we're kind of engaging in lots of different social activities and seeing friends, etc. I suppose the column on the right there, excelling, is jockeys probably get that if you know, if you're riding a winner or if you're on the crest of a wave. So either you're really in top form, flow, everything's going well outside the race, and you could be, you've got a new relationship, new boyfriend, new girlfriend, and you might have had a son or a daughter or something really good happens. And so it's nice to be in our right hand column every now and again, but it's probably probably maybe 1 or 2 days a week or 2 days a month, something like that. Then if you look towards the middle, sort of surviving, I think we all slip into here pretty often as well. So again, looking at the mood, just worried about things, a little bit nervous, and that could be natural. If it's your first ride, you're going to be a little bit nervous. If it's your first ride at a festival, if it's an Ascot or Cheltenham, you might be a little bit nervous, or if it's a job interview. So they're all quite normal. Irritable, so you know, maybe you get frustrated with people every now and again, but that could be down to if they're trouble sleeping. So if you have a bad night's sleep, you might be a little bit more irritable. In terms of that sort of social aspect as well, maybe you're not willing to go out as much, or people are going out for a meal or going to cinema and you don't really want to go out with them. So I think in that sort of column, we just need to be really aware of those emotions and behaviors. And it's not necessarily seeking help there, but I think if you're aware of it and you can kind of understand where they might be coming from or might be causing those sort of challenges, then we can kind of get ourselves almost back into that thriving column. But then again, that surviving column, you know, the key thing is, you know, chatting to people, people that you trust, and maybe you're worried for a good reason and they can kind of help you through it, and maybe you're worried for maybe not a pertinent issue, and people kind of settle you, oh, don't be worried about that, that's going to work out absolutely fine. And I suppose the further left we go, things get a little bit more serious. And so if we're looking at those classic sort of phrases that are thrown out there in terms of anxiety and depression, so anxiety in terms of you're worrying excessively about something that may have happened in the past or something that may happen in the future, but it's really affecting your day-to-day functioning outside of baseline. So if this isn't something that you usually do, you know, some people are generally maybe more worrying than others, but if you're usually pretty calm, but you feel I'm getting unnecessarily anxious here, I'm worried about different things, and then it's something that we need to really kind of pick up on and be aware of. Depression again, looking at depressed mood, feelings of guilt or not worth it, you know, you feel I'm no good as a jockey or as a person, sort of phrases like that are something to really be aware of. And the sort of physical aspect of it, being tired, your poor sleep there as well. So either you can't get to sleep or you can't wake up, having kind of, again, slipping out of that baseline, what your standard 7 to 8 hour sleep pattern might usually be. Sleep is a really good sort of indicator of that there's something might be amiss. Your thinking, your performance, so you're not willing to engage with people, your decision making might be a little bit off, and you might be irritable, lots of different things like that. And then the appetite is probably a little bit more nuanced in terms of jockeys, and appetite might kind of go up and down, but generally speaking, again, those normal habits around food are seriously disrupted. So within that column, yeah, we need to be really aware of our own emotions, and we need to seek out help if we're kind of slipping into that column. And then in terms of the last column in crisis on the left, and this is, you know, considerable clinical difficulties, and certainly I would not be qualified to train, and my training has qualified me to deal with these issues as a counselor or as a clinician, but I can certainly recognize these signs with people. So yeah, again, incredibly anxious and incredibly low mood, and just not wanting to function or not wanting to take part in general day-to-day life. Relationships really, really affected. Not wanting to go to work is a big one, and struggling to get out of bed or struggling to wake up, different things like that. So it looks as a broad sort of stroke of the human experience, and it certainly doesn't cover anything, and there's obviously we kind of slip in between lots of different stages ourselves, but I just think it's a nice illustration of you know what we all go through at some time, whether we've lost a loved one or we lose a pet, and can be incredibly traumatic to people, losing a job, and we're going to have lots of different challenges. And people have different abilities to handle those challenges in different ways. You know, so someone who might lose a parent could handle it well, and they lose their dog and, you know, be utterly distraught for months, you know. So it's certainly not, it's up to the individual massively. But I think being aware of those behaviours, and when is it kind of moving away from baseline? When is it moving away from your normal sort of functioning? Is it affecting your work? Is it affecting your relationships? Are big, big signs. And then in terms of that, where that support goes, I obviously can be that first step in maybe identifying what those behaviors, if they're clinical, and if they need to be addressed by a clinician, either a psychologist or counselor. I can certainly help jockeys with that and then refer on. Or else they can go straight to the PGA, they can ring Paul Struthers, and then there's that 24-hour hotline as well, provided by Sporting Chance. So there's lots of ways for jockeys to access that. if they're in the Injured Jockeys Fund centres as well, and speaking to a physio, speaking to an S&C, they can refer them straight on as well. So yeah, as I said, there's lots of avenues for them to go. But the big one is just being aware, is this behaviour gone away from my normal functioning for no good reason, maybe. So someone who has suffered a bereavement, you can kind of understand where this is coming from and you can walk through it. But if these things seem to be coming out of nowhere, that would indicate there's a clinical challenge there and that needs to be addressed as soon as possible.
Okay, you can come back now full screen.
Yeah, cool.
But that's a really helpful model. It's very simplistic and you know, you can easily place yourself in whichever category you're in. And so anybody out there watching this that does want help, I know that you're more than happy to be at a first port of call, as you are already for so many. So we'll share your details and, as you mentioned, those other details as well. And just encouraging anybody that is struggling to get help, because we don't want any more Liam Treadwells. I'm sure his family would absolutely say the same.
Yeah, 100%. And look, it mightn't even be that it's me or it's someone in a professional capacity. You know, it's anyone. Anyone can help. Half of the battle is getting off your chest and having someone to listen to you. It really takes the edge off things. As I said, it's getting there early. If you're coming home in the races and, you know, a constant term is, oh, my head is fried, you know, getting that off your chest, chatting with people is huge, whether it's someone within racing, whether it's someone outside of racing, but finding out what helps you get out of that sort of rigid kind of way of thinking is key. So yeah, it mightn't necessarily be me or anyone in that professional role, but if you do trust someone, hopefully you have two or three people on your phone that you can ring and just get that off your chest. I think that's, as we said, prevention is huge. So identifying those signs early, addressing them, and if you feel that you need further help with them, then contacting any one of the support that I've mentioned.
Yeah, and we at Star Sports will share those details. Egon, thank you so much from this interview and from chatting to you over the last few days. I have a massive newfound respect for jockeys as a flippant horse racing enthusiast. I certainly will just watch all racing differently. I think it's an incredibly tough time that they have to go through. And yeah, I hope that this has been helpful to jockeys, helpful to anyone. If it helps one person, then it's been worthwhile, and you've been fantastic. So thank you so much.
No, thank you very much for having me, Julie. And yeah, and hopefully, as you said, if we have one person out of it, then it was very much time well spent.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Download the Star Sports app from the App Store or Google Play. All of the Star Sports markets, including InPlay, all easily accessible from your phone or tablet. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.